should have done that before you started recording.
Yeah,
silly.
I should have, but you know, sometimes you just gotta get your feelings out when you think about them. Mm. And sometimes my feelings come out as gibberish.
And welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I do not know a lot about Doctor Who.
And today we are looking at Series 4, Episode 10, Midnight.
Mmm.
And to commemorate the fact that it's called Midnight, we are watching it at 4 p.m.
I thought it was called Midnight after the name of one of my stuffed animals growing up.
Russell T. Davies is like, man, somebody in like 15 years is going to really appreciate this title.
Aw, Manzers. Some little girl out there has a little stuffed, I think it was a Beanie Baby, named Midnight. This one's for her.
Well, actually, the name Midnight is a good setup for the Cassie Profassi today.
Ah, nuts.
So, your little prediction for this episode, we'll start with, what is Midnight the name of? So, this episode is considered one of Russell T. Davies' best. In fact, a lot of people consider it the best script he ever wrote for Doctor Who. I think that was true at the time. I feel like one of his more recent episodes has sort of overtaken it, but this was, you know, for a very long time, the best episode by most bars that Davies wrote. This episode takes place pretty much entirely on a bus. It's a space bus, so it looks a little bit more like a train car, but, you know, it's a small cast of people that are basically inside this bus.
Okay.
It is the only companion light episode, to my knowledge, except for, like, specials. Like, this is a true episode as opposed to a Christmas special that may not have an actual companion in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order to save time filming, they would have David Tennant film this episode, and then the next episode is a Doctor Light episode, so that one doesn't have a lot of Tennant in it, and so they could film these two episodes at the same time and save budget that way.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of those rare companion light episodes. This is basically the Doctor on a bus. So, to flesh out the question of what is Midnight, is it A, the planet they are on, B, the name of the bus they're on, or C, the place they are going to?
I've been thinking about Bullet Train this whole time.
Just Brad Pitt.
With Sandy Bullock squabbling on in his ear. Yes.
Sandra Bullock and Brian Tyree Henry. And mm-hmm. That guy who's married to a woman like 20 years older than him.
Wow, you're really nailing it down.
And a cool Korean actor that people like.
Yep, just getting more and more specific.
Yep, that's the movie Bullet Train. That's what this is.
I'm gonna go with C, the name of the place that they are going.
All right, so Midnight.
Just because I think that sounds cooler.
We're headed to Midnight, on a midnight train to Midnight.
Yeah.
And for the second Profassi today, I have told you that this is a companion light episode. So Donna is not really in it all that much. So the question I'm going to pose to you is, what is Donna doing during this episode?
Do I get anything else?
I can give you some multiple choice options if you want.
Yeah.
Is she A, on an adventure of her own, B, trapped somewhere the Doctor is trying to get to,
mm-hmm.
or C, just chilling?
Hmm. This is another instance where I like the answer C,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think that that's the case. The more likely scenario is she is separated from him and he is trying to get to her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember what A is.
A is that she's having her own adventure.
A
she's doing
sucks.
Her own thing.
Get out of here. A.
Go in the hole, A. A hole.
Go to your room, A.
You're grounded, A.
Let the before Christ talk.
A very angry Canadian parent. You're grounded, eh?
I don't think you heard my joke at all then.
I don't think I did, no.
I said, the before Christs are talking.
That's pretty good.
I'm going to go with B for this one.
All right, B. So Cassie's prefacies for this episode are that midnight is the place the bus is going to, and Donna is trapped there. Before we go into a little bit further, though, I'm curious, you know, you've seen how Russell T. Davies manages this, his show.
Sure.
He's the one who wrote, you know, the very first episodes. He wrote, he basically writes the first and last episode of every season. He also wrote the Big Dumb Babies episode with the Raxacora Cephalopatorians. So I'm just curious what you're expecting the tone of this episode to be.
So it seems that Russell T. Davies likes interesting ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And he likes putting the Doctor in particularly sticky situations.
Yes, I would think so.
So bearing that in mind, and I don't want to say like, oh, his are sillier, but there is,
his are campier, I think is a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Like, his camp doesn't necessarily mean silly. It just means, like, there's a theatricality to them.
I don't even want to say so much that there's a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Gridlock is a very good example of, like, putting the Doctor in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
That's a, I've never thought of that, but sure, make that make sense. And so I expect there to be a moment where I go, sure, why not? This logic makes no sense whatsoever. I'm accepting it because it is the show, and I have come to accept bullshit explanations for things. So why not? Let's go with it.
Okay.
Very much the Adam Sandler, Jennifer Aniston movie. Just go with it.
Very much like the Adam Sandler movie. Click.
That would also be fun. So the Doctor gets a universal remote.
I mean, like, he has a sonic screwdriver, so he...
That's not universal remote. I mean, it's funny because
the new design for the sonic screwdriver, the one that Nshutigawa has, looks sort of like the Click remote.
Oh, no. You know, that's not what I was expecting.
Yeah, I just showed her the new sonic screwdriver. I'm not a big fan of this design, no, to be honest.
You know why? I'm going to tell you why.
Why is that?
There are certain toys that are shaped that way. Now, it's not phallic in any way. That just looks like it should have a special button where if you press it, it does a sucking in motion that some people...
I mean, in a sense, they all do look a little,
well, yeah,
sex
but
toy-y.
Anything with a handle,
mm-hmm,
ends up looking sex toy-y. So even a screwdriver in itself looks a little sex toy-y.
Yeah.
Because it is shaped to be held comfortably. That, though, in particular, does look very much like it is ribbed for her pleasure.
We're getting a little off topic here.
Well, now I just want to go through and look at all of the screwdrivers and guess what their special functions would be.
Maybe we'll do that when we get a little bit deeper and you've seen
that,
more than just
that
the...
That sounds like an episode for the other version of me to join in on.
Let's just go back in the summary here. What sort of tone are you expecting for Midnight?
I told you.
I was just trying to get it condensed again.
In the broadest stroke, camp.
Okay.
And, like, overly theatrical. I guess that's still camp, huh? So, campy, definitely.
Are you expecting something more lighthearted or more...
Considering the past two episodes we've had and from the spoilies I'm seeing from a future episode, I think that this and the next are probably going to be on the lighter side. I don't anticipate anybody, like, dying horrifically.
Okay.
And if anybody does die horrifically, it'll be kind of funny.
Well, we will find out together as we watch Midnight.
God, I hope somebody dies in a funny way now.
This episode of Who Is My Doctor has no sponsor. Just didn't really feel like it this week. Figured since it's a companion light episode, it could be a commercial light episode. Just kidding. It's
the man car! Third time's the charm, motherfucker! The man car's here to sleep with your wife. It's already in your house sleeping with your wife. And if you weren't married, then good news, the man car has given you the wife of your dreams. But bad news, the man car is sleeping with her right now. So be sure to be quiet, because the man car is a very light sleeper and will be very upset if you wake it. It has a very important meeting tomorrow, so do not disturb it as it sleeps with your wife. The man car! We're not exactly sure what the joke is anymore either.
And we are back from Midnight. So what'd you think, Cassie?
I have a joke.
I have a joke.
Knock, knock.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Who's there?
Doctor.
Doctor.
Doctor what?
Doctor what?
See, I had a bit already planned out. And you went in with my least favorite sibling game, which I understand is the crux of this whole episode. But when I tell you the copy game, I wanted to start throwing fists and throwing people out of the car. Kind of like this episode.
I almost wonder if it was based on like watching kids do it. And they're like, what? Like adults doing that would be horrifying. Like kids doing it is like them trying to be like trolls to one another. But
I still stand by there is a level of campiness to this episode because it reminded me so much of me being a child getting so angry at my cousins. Because one of my younger cousins is only 2 years younger than me. So we grew up pretty close together. So we do behave more like brother sister. You don't have to leave it in, but Trevor. So I need you to imagine little Trevor, a.k.a. Taz, because he was running around undiagnosed in my grandma's house like he had no inhibition and was feeling the rain on his skin. And especially on long car rides to the beach or down to San Diego or something where this is the early 2000s. We didn't really have smartphone or tablets. So car games really were name all 50 capitals of the United States. I spy, or let's see how angry we can make Cassie by everybody copying her at once.
Yeah, there's something about it that's like, I feel like if you read it on paper, you'd be like, that seems really silly. But then you watch it and you're like, oh, this, nope, this is, I don't like this.
Well, because it did bring on the, there was a moral dilemma in it, which I'm sure that we'll talk about in a little bit. But when children are playing this game, it at the end, it's usually a mom, a person in charge saying, that's enough! And just screaming in the particular pitch that only moms can reach.
But there's no one in charge here.
Everybody, every child in the room, stop what they're doing because they've realized that they've pissed off the adult in the room. In this case, it's only adults in the room.
Yeah.
Frankly,
And there's not even really, none of the adults really have any real sense of authority. The only ones that do are, the parents have authority over Jethro, but Jethro doesn't even give a fuck about his parents.
No, because Jethro is, he's like 18. he looks like, 17, 18.
Yeah, but there's no, like,
because even the hostess, who would be, like, the adult in charge, doesn't have answers. Therefore, the minute that things start to go awry, she doesn't know. She can't say, this is what's happening. She's trying to enforce the rules, and that just makes everybody else nuts.
Yeah, well, even then, you could say that her position is a service position. She's not in a leadership role.
No.
That would have been the driver who dies.
Who is vaporized.
Yes. So there is no one in charge who's in a leadership role.
Because even the doctor, who usually assumes that position, is not immediately respected by his peers, if for no other reason than he spent the first, hour, 2 hours? I think it's an hour, because by the time that they stop, an emergency vehicle can't reach them for another hour.
Yeah.
So we can say for the first hour of this trip, the doctor is ingratiating himself with everybody on this damn bus by yucking it up, chatting, saying, let's all talk.
Yeah. That's the thing, is what makes this story really work is that all the things that usually work in the doctor's favor all work against him in this episode. Like, the fact that he's smart, the fact that he's an alien, the fact that he kind of looks down on other people because he's as smart as he is.
He doesn't ever say point blank, I'm an alien. He just says, it's because I'm clever.
Yeah.
Which is, like, the most annoying thing that somebody could say in a time of crisis of, I'm better than you because I'm more clever.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you, like, remove yourself from knowing the show for a second and just think about, like, this episode as a self-contained story, we only trust the Doctor because we know who the Doctor is, we know that's what he's doing, but removed from context, it really just seems like he's kind of a prick that's shown up.
Removed from context, removed from his companion.
Yes.
Because 9 times out of 10, it's the companion that can be the middle ground for everybody else, and the companion is the mediator between the everybody else and the doctor.
Yeah.
So that way when everybody says, well, why should we trust you? That's their job to then say, I trust him.
Yeah.
And then that's usually the, like, well, this person's a human just like us, kind of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How many times have we seen, like, Rose or Martha or Donna say, like, I trust him with my life, and make, like, some really impassioned case?
Even somebody like River, the second she says, I trust him implicitly. Because it's the same thing. We just saw it in the previous episode, where everybody is saying, why should we trust him? He just got here. And it takes that one person to say, well, I know him, I trust him, for everybody else to pipe down and keep on doing basically what they're being told. Because they've had somebody else, a person in charge, or a person who is, I suppose in River's case too, like, they all seem, Mr. Lux was the person in charge. She was kind of equals with everybody else. But it only takes that one person to say that they know, and or that they know the doctor, and that he should be listened to. But in this particular case, Donna is having a spa day, which I'm really mad, because I said that would be really funny.
And you were right. It was pretty funny.
It's just clever. I did say that I think this is the closest thing that we'll get to the doctor having a beach episode.
Sort of. I mean,
a beach episode in the
it's as close as Donna gets to having a beach episode,
well,
that's for sure.
It's a beach episode in the way that the original intention was for Donna and for the doctor to be having a leisure day. But leisure does not seem to find the doctor. Chaos does.
Yeah.
And
they were even at a leisure palace.
Yeah. Which, God, I want to go to a spa. If anybody wants to send us, like, $75 each for a crappy spa, but just seeing those, like, beautiful crystal clear waters and her white fluffy robe, I went, I have only ever been to a sauna, like, only, wasn't a sauna, it was a hot spring. This is going to be braggadocious for, like, 30 seconds. It has a point, I promise.
Okay.
I went to Costa Rica when I was in high school. It was, like, the big school trip, and I was able to go because I hadn't totaled any cars, and my mom felt bad that she hadn't spent as much money on me as she had my sister. And one of the events that we did there was going to Hot Spring, and mm-hmm. they had ice cold springs and hot springs, obviously. And I just remember going in. I had a horrible rash all over my body just from, I think it was Nair that I used before going on the trip to like eradicate the hair from my body, because God forbid I have body hair. But I had this horrible rash, and it was going into the water that like healed me. It cured me of all my like skin issues. And that, it, for me, is...
You came out, like, shiny and literally, yes. like, squeaked with every step.
Oh, my God. I was like a little seal hopping around, just slapping my tummy, and it was great and wonderful. I want that for the doctor so bad, but I don't think that he will ever have his shiny, glistening seal day.
He never gets a day off, that doctor.
Donna clearly does. She looks nice and fresh and pressed and... good to go by the end of the episode. I know they were calling it bus and truck. It was giving Leela's SUV.
I mean, you could also call it a shuttle, might be the better way of putting it.
Well, Jessica, like, you know the episode I'm talking about when they have to get a new ship for Planet Express and the professor opts to, like, trick out the ship and make it into effectively a sports car. And Leela gets the more modest version, which is just the space transportation equivalent of a Honda Odyssey with no windows and just like a pixelated screen to show them what they're looking at outside. And it wasn't until the doctor goes into the driving pit, the engine room, and there's a screen showing what the outside looks like, that I went, this is just Leela's ship.
I mean, I look at it and all I see is the Star Tours vehicle.
It was also very Star Tours-y. Yeah. There was a Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman-esque quality about the very beginning with the showcasing of, I don't even...
There was
like the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yeah, there was some kind of like old TV program. They had... That was like some just psychedelic imagery playing like on another projector, and then they had animation playing, and so it was just this cacophony of noise.
Which, I don't know if you've ever watched any episodes of Pee-wee's Playhouse. That's one of like Paul Rubens's, like, that was one of his favorite things to do for Pee-wee, was to showcase things that are not intrinsically funny by modern standards, because they were made at a time where, like, the one that really comes to mind is, there is, they showed it first during the first special at the Roxy, and it was a, like, information, like, how to be a good boy video featuring a Mr. Bungle, because you do not want to be a Mr. Bungle. And it, there's nothing really funny about it.
Wait, Cassie, am I Mr. Bungle?
No. A Mr. Bungle does not wash his hands before lunchtime.
Oh, okay.
You do not want to be a Mr. Bungle.
Mr. Bungle also... Goofus and Gallant energy.
Yeah, and it's... This episode starts off very strong with showcasing all of these things. And then the cockpit is very Star Tours.
Yeah.
It was Paul Rubens-y without being Paul
Rubens. I mean,
Rubens.
I had really thought watching the specifically like four TV programs overlaying over one another.
Oh,
and
my
the
God.
Specific choice of what they were, that one was like a disco music show, one was like old school animation, one was this like psychedelic imagery. I was like, this is what it feels like to be inside Cassie's brain. So if any of you want a little example, that like 30 seconds of Midnight where the noise is overlapping constantly, that is why she is the way she is.
Genuinely, if anybody ever wants to know what it's like to live inside my brain, just watch all of Pee-wee's Playhouse while you're sick in bed. And that one is a set the mood a little bit, where you're extremely sweaty, but you don't want anything touching you, and you can't eat any food because your appendix is rupturing. all you can watch is Pee-wee's Playhouse because that's the only thing that's bringing you a little bit of joy. That's what it's like to be me, having a tummy ache, unable to sleep, watching Pee-wee's Playhouse. I do wish that there was some kind of communication between the doctor and Donna, but isolating them also is nice.
Yeah, it...
Because then
it doesn't work, as the episode wouldn't work if there was any contact with the outside world.
No.
Loneliness is sort of a really strong theme in the episode.
I would even go so far as to say isolation.
Yeah, isolation is a good way of as maybe
because
a better
loneliness
way of
would imply that everybody in the bus did not know each other, mm-hmm. at least a little bit. And the doctor makes it a very clear point of getting to know everybody and to acquaint himself with every single person. Except for the hostess.
Yeah. Everyone has it to a certain extent. Some of the more obvious ones are Jethro very specifically doesn't want to sit with his parents, so he sits on the opposite side of the shuttle. You have the professor. Oh, quick side note, the professor is played by an actor named David Troughton, son of Patrick Troughton, the second doctor.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah. Fun. Another fun thing, the episode is directed by Alice Troughton, who is unrelated to both of them.
That's serendipitous.
He just happens to have the same last name. It's really fun, especially because when you watch this, the professor feels a lot like the second doctor. A lot of this, like, floppy, he's doing a lot of, like, flopping with his hands and, like, just explaining a lot of technical jargon.
He feels like a professor stereotype.
Yeah, whenever we get to him, I'm sure you'll feel it. It would be nice if David is now far too old to ever play his father's doctor, but it would have been interesting if they could have done that at some point. Especially because in this episode, he really gives you that impression, but we'll get to that at some point, I'm sure. He is the only person who is researching this planet, much like his assistant Dee Dee, who is the only person searching for the lost moon of Poosh.
Poosh.
Which is just a fun thing to say.
I really like making David Tennant do any oosh sound.
Do oosh sounds?
Yeah. To Poosh.
Jadoon platoon upon the moon of Poosh.
Poosh.
Then there's...
Poosh is just one stone's throw from a shoosh. Shoosher. Snows. That's a people.
And then we get, in the front of the car, there are not two drivers. There is a driver and there is a mechanic.
Trainee.
And then we have the hostess, who is the only, like, crew member aboard this. Everyone else is either working up front or is a passenger. And then we have, most importantly, Skye Silvestri, who, you know, tells a story about how she is there because her ex-wife has decided that she needed space. And by space, she meant an entire other galaxy. So she is feeling, of everyone there, the most isolated. Mm. As evidence of the fact that I believe she's sitting like two rows ahead of everyone else. She's the only one at the front of the car.
Yeah.
She's there entirely on her own. Even when she's talking with the doctor, it's very like almost in hushed whispers.
Yeah.
Like she's not there.
Well, because everybody else is having some kind of conversation.
Yeah. And so the, whatever we want to call, because we can't call it Skye right now, but I guess...
We can call it the me.
So the me, the midnight entity, goes after
the
Skye.
Me. I'm not saying midnight entity. That's a hard word for me to say.
So the me ends up going after Skye first. Skye, who is the most isolated of the group here.
Well, it seems that it's going after her not... Right out the gate, it seems to only go after her after it's already vanquished the front of the cabin.
Yeah, it goes out of the cabin.
And she just so happens to be up closest to
Well,
the front
I'm also
of the cabin.
I'm going there's a theme here I wanted to touch on because like I said, she she
I'm Zach. I'm the smartest person in the room.
Because I'm clever.
Shut up, you wish. I'm stupid. People like me more.
I never said you were stupid. So
not to my face.
So Skye is feeling the most isolated of the group here. She is the one who was attacked. Now they make an assumption in the episode that it is because she was the most scared of everyone there. Mm-hmm. But I think that also feeds into that she's the most scared because she doesn't have anyone else there that she's like attached onto. Everyone else has somebody, even if they're not close.
Yeah. Between her and the doctor, they don't really have either to lean on.
Yeah, and the doctor has been a whole social butterfly since he turned off all the things and decided, oh, I guess we'll have to just sit here and talk with one another. I have never hated the doctor more than when he decided to be the guy on the plane that's like, I want to talk to everybody here.
I mean, considering how small, though, the bus is.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
I'm just like, I'm on vacation. If someone decides to turn off the TV that I was going to enjoy and then bother me...
No, but everybody seemed to be rather disinterested.
Yeah.
Because right at the very beginning, Dee and the professor decline any headphones at the earplugs, please.
So, you know, when later on when when everyone's pointing fingers at him and they're saying, like, we don't know who you are. We don't even know your name. We don't know what you're a doctor of. What is your real name? John Smith's not a real name. All those sorts of things. He's getting pushed further and further, like, slightly back away from the rest of the group. Even the people that he was getting along with, like Jethro, start turning on him. And as soon as everyone in the party has turned against him, the me is now only latched to Silvestri and the doctor. Because the doctor himself is now also isolated from the rest of the group. And so it's sort of this being that is feeding on people that feel isolated.
My thought, or my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, which I know you probably will,
mm-hmm.
I got the impression that it was feeding on elevated heart rate and blood.
I mean, it's possible, but I would feel like once the other people started pitching murder... It might have...
Perhaps an element of fear, then.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly something to be said of, like, people who are, you know, feeling the most fearful, or it's just, who is the easiest prey in this moment? And it's
anxious.
And it's whoever has, like, separated from the rest of the pack. So there's a level of, like, okay, if I can feed the paranoia of this group, because they say that the being, like, latches out and whispers in your brain, and the me has been separating the doctor from everyone else because it was the easiest split to make. Because he was the only other person there that had no connection to everything else going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think that's... I think it's a really interesting, like, thematic play that you don't often get in Doctor Who, especially because it's fun that they never say it outright. In fact, the two things they say sort of contradict it, but it's also the characters just making guesses. You know, it's because they have the guess that that the first thought is that she attacks Skye because she's the most afraid, and then the doctor assumes that that the Midnight Entity has latched onto the doctor because he's the cleverest in the room, and the doctor is wrong. He's latched onto the doctor because the doctor, they've all agreed they can kill the doctor.
Mm-hmm. But there is nothing scarier than a white woman deranged.
You know, you're not wrong, and they picked a good actress for that too.
Yes.
Because she looks like someone who would ask to see the manager.
But, like, in a very nice way. The kind that would just be like, I don't want to make a fuss. This is friendly fire. It does have very much the same energy as the monsters are doing Maple Street.
I don't know what that is.
So it's a Twilight Zone episode.
Okay.
Where there is a monster.
Okay.
It's on Maple Street. Lights are
following so far.
Yeah. Lights are going out. People are paranoid, screaming and yelling at each other. You don't actually ever see any monster.
Mm-hmm.
It is basically a monster witch hunt where everybody, every neighbor is accusing the other of being an alien, being a monster.
It's almost like The Thing, like John
Carpenter's
The Thing.
Kind of, but it has very much that same energy of people are afraid and the fear is only making the fear worse. I think there was one year that Horror Nights had a like their theme was like what fear fears most, and that's what this feels like, more or less.
We have nothing to fear but what fear fears most.
Yes, that was an acute observation from Haley in the other room.
It's okay, we won't credit her at all.
No, never. I wanted to pick apart, though, because Dee Dee mentions a poem.
Okay.
That was Mustn't Look at Goblin Men.
Mustn't Look at Goblin Men We should not eat their fruits.
Because the only thing I could really think of is, like, if I'm feeling particular over a bushel of cherries or something like that.
Cassie is a goblin man.
I am a goblin man.
And we should not eat her fruits, because then she will be very mad.
Oh my god. Unless I offer them up. Anybody eat my fruit, you're dead.
Vampire rules regarding fruit.
I out myself right out of the gate and say, I bought a thing to share. Don't let me hoard it.
I do like that a trait of the Doctor that he has throughout the episode is that he almost wants to study whatever this thing is.
Because it's new and interesting.
Yeah. So at first he's just like telling everyone else to shut up. Like in a way that's just like, I'm doing science. And it's talking when you're talking, and I need it to stop talking when you're talking, so stop talking.
Frankly, I really enjoyed the Doctor Witch Hunt. We kind of talked about it at the very tippy top of this episode, mm-hmm. but I really do like people basically going after the Doctor mm-hmm. and him having to defend himself, because really, without a companion, there isn't a legitimate reason why perfect strangers should trust him implicitly.
Yeah.
Complicitly?
Implicitly. Yeah, you're right, implicitly. Well, it's also really interesting because it shows you, it's a reminder that the Doctor is not, like we spend so much time with him, especially over the course of now we're on the near the end of the fourth season with him. It's good to have this refresher that the Doctor is a weird guy.
Doctor is a weird guy. Doctor is also very flawed.
Yes.
And most of the time he covers up his flaws by being the cleverest and smartest and being, I don't want to call him a messiah by any means, but he is a savior in a lot of capacities. And more often than not, his cleverness and wits is what gets him and whatever group of people he happens to be surrounded by out of the pickles that they're in. Mm-hmm. But in this particular instance, his cleverness and wits are not helping him. And his strangeness is what is his downfall.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm remembering, if you remember back to the beginning of Martha's first season with Smith and Jones,
mm-hmm.
That was one of the first times we've seen him without a companion. Because he'd been with Rose the entire time he's been the 10th Doctor. And so this was the first time at the beginning of this episode we get to see what he is like on his own. And he's kind of a smug bastard.
Like he's a little bitch boy.
Yeah, he rolls into a hospital and like is kind of flagrant with the fact like, oh, I've got two hearts. Isn't that really fascinating? Like he's pretending that something, he seems to fly in the face of like being subtle, having decorum. He's just kind of a prick. And so there's a part of it that's like, without his companion, the Doctor isn't really likable. You realize how flimsy a lot of his answers are without someone to, like, corroborate them.
Well, especially since his answers, we had kind of brought this up before, of this episode being particularly childish. His answers, more often than not, are basically, because I said so.
Yeah. That's like, especially when he's like, why are you rifling around in the wires? And his response is just, because I'm clever. Which, you know, as everyone immediately points out, so you're saying the rest of us are stupid.
Yeah.
Because that kind of is what he's saying.
Well, because it's like, all right, bud, you have a student, a professor. Like, they're
someone who works on this vessel.
Yeah, somebody who is an active, like, employee on this vessel. The only people that I would doubt would be the parents and Jethro, just because they seem to be there simply on vacation.
I mean, also, I would underestimate them because their names are Biff and Jethro.
Jethro's kind of a cool name.
Biff,
though, I thought that the Doctor was talking about Back to Future.
Nope.
The future, nope. Not Back to Future.
That guy's name is just Biff. It's Biff, Val, and Jethro.
Biff, Val, and Jethro does sound like a horrible law firm.
Welcome to the law firm of Biff, Val, and Jethro. We will definitely take all your DUI cases.
Welcome to the law firm of Biff, Val, and Jethro, where we will help you hide the body and then not say nothing. That's our motto.
Are you being sued for stealing your neighbor's chickens? Heh, they deserved it.
If that horse entered your property, that is officially, legally your horse. Your property, your horse.
This episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by Biff, Fallon, and Jethro Esquires.
Get them while they're hot. That can be one that we do together.
I liked it especially when the professor specifically was the one who got really mad at the doctor saying he was clever. Because the professor, especially early on, seems to take a lot of pride in the fact that he is...
studying this planet.
Yeah, he is studying this planet. So there's a part of it where I'm sure he, until the doctor basically stamped his foot down on it, felt like he was the smartest person in the room. Because especially with the way he talks to Dee Dee.
He had been on this particular trip 14 times.
Yeah.
It would be the equivalent of the doctor going in a submarine with James Cameron to go down and look at the Titanic and then say that he knows more about the Titanic than James Cameron does.
Which is almost certainly true, because you would assume the doctor at some point has been on the actual Titanic, not just the space one that we saw a few episodes ago.
Yes. However, do I want to be engaged in battle with James Cameron? An intellectual battle about the Titanic? No, thank you. That's his hyperfixation, motherfucker. I just really liked everybody going, do it! Do it now! Do it! For no other reason than it's very Palpatine.
Do it.
And then there's an episode of Friends where it's one of my favorite episodes. They come back from a beach trip where at the end of the trip, they're like, oh, how was your trip? Like, oh, nothing. I don't know. Because what had happened is that Monica gets stung by a jellyfish, mm-hmm. and the way that they treat her jellyfish sting is by having Joey or it starts with Joey, but then it ends with Chandler peeing on it.
Mm.
And so he's like, sometimes at night I can hear everybody, do it now, do it. And then Joey goes, yeah, and sometimes I just like to scream that at the wall just to mess with you.
It's pretty good.
There are some episodes of that show that I really like, that being one of them.
Yeah. So there's something, one thing that I really appreciate is that because we never see the Midnight Entity, the only ways we really can have it portrayed is in the actors,
yeah,
and in the sound design.
I guess the banging on the walls is sound design.
Well, I'm also talking about the little music stings. That happened.
Oh, I didn't even clock that.
Yeah, there's a lot of little music moments.
I was distracted by how Sky Silvestri didn't not look like J.K. Rowling.
See, the difference though is Sky only wanted to murder someone.
Yes, but that's only after she was infected.
Yeah.
Maybe, just maybe. Maybe.
I'm sure there's a joke here somewhere that I just cannot think of.
J.K. Rowling is infected with being a ass hat. I'm sure I can be much cleverer than that.
Yeah, there's a few different music stings to let, specifically to let you know, like, and moving into the next phase of what the entity does.
Mm. I did clock that at the very beginning of the episode. It is happy-go-lucky,
mm-hmm.
very my favorite 70s supermarket music.
Mm-hmm.
But then as the episode goes on, that levity leaves.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just dissipate and morph and turn into something else. It completely gets like vacuumed out of the room.
Mm-hmm. And so,
and it's the second that the me enters that then you do have that shift. And then I became way more interested in the moral dilemma that everybody was having about throwing Sky out of tram, because there was about 6 seconds, or that's what Dee Dee was saying, is that there's 6 seconds that they have to open the door, throw her out, and close the door again before the
open the door, get on the floor,
everybody do the dinosaur walk the dinosaur, my bad. But the doctor doesn't want anybody to die. Two people have already died, let's not make it a third.
Mm-hmm.
Is exactly what he says. And I do really like everybody yelling and screaming about wanting to throw this innocent woman off board. Because I think the people that are against it are Jethro.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just a boy. His vote doesn't count.
Dr. Amelia goes, we're not taking a vote. We're just not doing it.
Bullshit.
That's how I would act in that situation, too. We're just like, this is, we're not voting. This is no. We're not doing it.
This is no. But it's just, it's nice to see the doctor being put in a moral life or death situation
mm-hmm.
without a companion.
Yeah. And also, you know, David Tennant is acting his ass off in this episode.
Yes.
Like there are
because he's having to be, he doesn't have, and I don't want it to sound like I'm saying that a companion is not helpful, but he doesn't have a crutch. Specifically in the sense of like the doctor, very much like how you had said before, is completely isolated.
Yeah.
He is alone. Therefore, David Tennant is also having to be the doctor in a state of fight or flight
mm-hmm.
in which there is nowhere for him to go.
Yeah.
He cannot do a lot of running like he seems to do so often.
Well, honestly, even getting past that, one of the nice parts for David Tennant is when the entity is now making him echo her.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's stuck in place and all we get is David Tennant's like unflinching, like frightened stare as he's like
asymmetrical stare. Yes.
Yeah. As he's like getting flop sweat from repeating it and like feeling it as like wriggling around in his brain.
It feels almost like the me puts its victims into like a state of seizure. It's not actively spasm, but it is a state of complete frozen
it's like a chokehold of the brain.
Yes. Because I think he even says, as the me, it's so cold, I can't breathe.
Yeah. But there's a moment in particular that I really like where the entity says, "We throw him out." And so David Tennant has to repeat, "Yes, throw him out." And there's, I don't know how exactly he does it. I don't know what he, like how he shifts in such a way where his face doesn't seem to move, but the emotion in his face seems to move.
It's all in his eyes.
Yeah. It's
eye acting, baby. My favorite.
Yeah. Because there's a part of him where he's just like, oh my God, this thing is making me ask them to kill me. Like I have now been condemned to death and I can do nothing about it. I made a
deal trying to be the hero, trying to save everybody on this ship.
Yeah.
Yet I am the one that is now going to suffer because I decided to be a hero.
And for the doctor, I'm sure he also knows that as soon as I'm gone, this thing is just going to keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to keep pinging around, feeding off whoever it is until it's fed on everyone here, till everyone else is dead and it gets off.
Mm-hmm.
Or worse, it doesn't get off and it drives all the way to the leisure palace and infects everyone there just like everyone says it will. This leads to a nice little moment there where, you know, there's sort of this argument everyone's having over whether or not it's infected, if it's infected the doctor, if it's still really inside Sky or what's going on. And so as they're trying to drag the doctor out, the doctor manages to hook his foot on a chair.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, nope. Nope. Which is also a nice symbol, like, no, what we think is happening is really happening. The doctor is about to be thrown out, and the actual entity is inside Sky Silvestri.
I do like that the ultimate decision is to throw her out. It makes me kind of sad knowing that it was at the hands of the stewardess.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a cool, like, 20 minutes later, where they're all sitting in silence, and the doctor goes, nobody got her name.
She's not even credited with a name. Her name in the credits is the hostess.
Because even the doctor himself spent so much time going around, talking to everybody, learning what they're doing, what they're up to,
mm-hmm.
you know, having one-on-one moments with everybody, except for the person who does ultimately save the day.
Yeah. And I also like that the way that it happens is because she went around talking to everyone, so she knows what they sound like. So she knows that the doctor says Allons-y. And so the second Sky says it, she's like, wait a second, hang on. You know, it's a nice, like, human moment, because it's also a thing that we know about the doctor. We know that he says Allons-y. But it's, that's not a thing that they would know, except for the hostess who happened to hear it.
And happened to question it because it's French, a language she probably doesn't know.
Yeah. While the rest of them, for whatever reason, are making things up. Like, they have had, they've almost had, like, hallucinations of what's happened, where they're like, no, I saw it go from her into him. I saw it happen, and you saw it happen, right, Jethro? And Jethro's like, I don't think I saw anything. She's like, yes, you did. You saw it. Which, there's a real authentic mom moment there. Like, not my mom, necessarily. My mom is way cooler, but I could also feel, I've seen a lot of moms where I would expect them to be like, if their kid went, no, I didn't see that at all, they'd be like, yes, you did.
It's a very common parent to child thing, but it's that weird space and time in which the child is no longer a child.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's still the like, well, you're my sweet little boy. I know more than you do. The same way that, like, I look at my nephews and I'm like, oh, you're just my sweet little boys. Meanwhile, one of them is 22 and has a child of his own. What do you know, bud? Like, no, he's a dad. Like, he knows different than you now. He's not a child anymore, stupid.
Yeah, and then,
but it's a very authentic, like, Jethro's parents seem to be doing a lot of stepping on him.
Jethro's parents suck. Like,
you don't like Biff and Val?
Val is another entry in the Doctor Who's terrible mom category.
Yeah.
Because in addition to, you know, the various parts where she fully makes shit up about, like, I saw the entity go from her into him, which, no, you didn't, because nobody,
again,
it has no physical form. None of you saw anything.
Again, nothing scarier than a white woman deranged.
Yeah. She also, at the end of the episode, looks at the Doctor and goes, I said it was her. No, you fucking didn't.
No.
You said exactly the opposite, bitch.
You are saying what you want your story to be when you're telling this to your friends later on at, what, bridge? Do moms still play that on the weekends?
In the year, whatever year this
in
is.
In space.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a part that's like, when Jethro finishes college, he is never going to talk to you again because y'all suck.
Yeah. Or if he does, it'll be the obligatory holiday appearance so he doesn't feel so bad later on about asking for money.
Man, the authentic millennial experience, if there ever was one.
Yep. Don't I know it.
Another, like, awful moment for her is when they're having the big spat and the Doctor says, they ask where the Doctor came from, and he says he's just a traveler, he's traveling. And her response is, like an immigrant?
Yeah.
What the fuck, lady?
If she had said, like an alien, that would have been fine, because we're in fucking outer space. You can say alien in space.
God, fucking
like an immigrant?
Goddamn space Republicans.
Ugh.
The worst kind of Republicans.
Ugh, I'm going to the one place that hasn't been corrupted by capitalism. Space!
I have terrible news, Tim Curry. Reaganomics has found its way into space.
Oh my god! Because they're not there on research, they're there for leisure. They should have just stayed at the Leisure Palace.
Yeah.
But I like the ending. I like just Donna coming in for a nice juicy hug.
Yeah, just it's another one of those where you're like, okay, they're like, this is their best friends, and I appreciate this. This is good, strong characterization without having to say a whole lot. And I also really like when Donna just, like, as a friend, repeats what the Doctor says, and he's, don't do that. Cause she's like, yeah, I get it.
But speaking of other companions, we did get another glimpse of a certain Rose Tyler on the TV.
Yeah, we get the exact same clip that you pointed out in the Santara
Doctor!
Strategy.
Yeah.
So we got to find out what's up with that soon, huh?
Yeah, sure don't know anything.
Well, maybe we can find out what's up with that next time on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor? Who is...
Watermelon, watermelon.
Washing machine, washing machine, washing machine.
Sniffle. Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
Good morning, good evening. I'm gonna kill you. Good morning, good evening, and good night.
We both know the best way to do an outro for Midnight is for me to mimic the episode where I have someone echo me and like we do a back and forth until they start overlapping everything I say, but I can't do that because I'm alone right now. I'm all alone at my computer putting this thing together. Is that what you wanted to hear? That I'm lonely? Well, I'm not lonely. I'm just really wanting you to subscribe to this podcast. And maybe give it a thumbs up, or 5 stars, or leave a nice review to help us with the algorithm, help us find other Whovians, and, you know, maybe if you're feeling nice, you could follow us on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, or Instagram at WimDPod. That's WIMDPOD. And next week is Turn Left, so we will see you next Tuesday, because our Tuesdays are now Whose Days. Okay, maybe I'm a little lonely.